This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Hey, What's News listeners? This is Luke Vargas, and we want to hear from you about which of our daily podcasts you usually listen to. Is it just What's News, or maybe Tech News Briefing, Your Money Briefing, Minute Briefing, The Journal, or maybe all of them? If you're listening on Spotify, look for our poll under the episode description or send us an email to wnpod@wsj.com. We've been reading everything that you've sent in and have been truly overwhelmed by the response. Thank you so much for that. And now, on to the show. Businesses grapple with the potential workplace fallout from yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on affirmative action. Plus, U.S. officials warn firms of the risks posed by China's updated espionage law and drought in America's breadbasket.
Many farmers across the country are abandoning scorched fields at the greatest rate since 1917. When we look into history books, if you recall the Dust Bowl, farmers are abandoning wheat fields faster than they did at any point during that period of time.
It's Friday, June 30th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Employers are bracing for new challenges to their diversity policies in the wake of a Supreme Court ruling yesterday that found it unconstitutional to consider race in university admissions. A number of large companies, including Procter & Gamble, Facebook parent Meta, and Starbucks, had argued in a joint amicus brief to the court that they relied on universities to help them recruit from a broad pool of prospective candidates. Following yesterday's decision, companies are expecting a reduction in the racial diversity within the pool of highly educated candidates for future jobs, including leadership roles. They also say the ruling will lead to challenges to internal diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, with some predicting those efforts could face legal challenges if the existence of race or gender-based goals are seen by some as discrimination. According to executives, many companies said they plan to continue diversity initiatives, though the Supreme Court's ruling will require employers to articulate why programs meant to increase representation matter to a company's performance. U.S. counterintelligence officials are amping up warnings to American executives about fresh dangers of doing business in China as a result of an amended Chinese law which seeks to combat espionage. A bulletin issued by the National Counterintelligence and Security Center and viewed by the Wall Street Journal warns that the revised law is vague about what constitutes espionage. This, it says, gives Beijing greater access to and control over companies' data and potentially allows it to turn what could be considered normal business activities into criminal acts. China's government has said the rights of foreign businesses are protected under Chinese law. The amended law takes effect tomorrow. Meanwhile, China's economy is showing new signs of weakness. According to new data released today, the country's manufacturing sector contracted for a third straight month in June, while the non-manufacturing sector also weakened. There are signs that a nagging jobs shortage, especially for young people, isn't going away either, with employment declining across both sectors. Our China economics reporter Stella Xia in Hong Kong told me what is weighing on China's economy.
So really the biggest drag on the economy right now is softening exports, as we've seen from today's manufacturing data. Policymakers in China, they've been really trying to maintain the country's lead in global trade by measures such as offering tax cuts for exporters and also to some extent allow its currency to depreciate. But still, we saw demand from overseas continues to drop, given, you know, high inflation elsewhere in the world. And also within China, a domestic rebound led by consumer spending is showing signs of slowdown.
And so, Stella, where does that likely leave policymakers in Beijing then?
So economists say, you know, Beijing really need to be more aggressive in terms of providing policy support to stimulate growth. But so far, they have remained reluctant to pump large amount of credit into the economy. Policymakers also hasn't really launched a big round of government spending as it did back in the global financial crisis around 2008. The concern is the relative restraints may come at a cost, especially if the recent downturn in demand could become self-fulfilling in a way.
That was Journal reporter Stella Xia in Hong Kong. And we are just hours away from the release of U.S. consumer spending figures for May. They are due at 8:30 Eastern, and our reporter Harriet Torrey told me that the numbers will likely point to an economy that is showing surprising strength in spite of efforts by the Fed to slow growth and cool inflation.
This report is expected to show that consumers did continue to spend in May, but just at a slightly slower pace than they did in April. Economists are expecting that spending increased 0.2% on the month. In April, we saw a much bigger jump, 0.8%. Although there is, of course, always room for surprises. We saw on Thursday the GDP report for the first quarter was revised considerably higher, and the main reason for that was because of much stronger consumer spending in the first quarter, the strongest in 2 years, actually. So consumers definitely have been continuing to spend at a very healthy clip. And it just seems to be some increased optimism. Consumer confidence has been picking up this month. So definitely shoppers are feeling pretty good about the economy right now. And for the Fed, that means that there might be more work to do in terms of bringing down inflation.
Coming up, American food inflation may not be easing for much longer. Our look at the climate conditions that are driving up crop prices in trading this month and more after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Just as food prices were starting to show signs of easing after the pandemic and after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, they are once again back on the rise. Alongside higher wheat futures, oat prices are up 11% this month in trading in Chicago, while soybean oil used in frying and baking, as well as low-carbon trucking fuel, has surged 29%. David Uberti is a Journal commodities reporter, and he joins me now to explain the trends that are threatening yet again to prop up food inflation. David, who or what is the culprit here?
Well, right now, nearly a third of the High Plains and almost two-thirds of the Midwest is in what climatologists consider a moderate drought. And what this has done is threaten a lot of the wheat crops, corn crops, and in some cases, soybean crops as well that go into everything from pizza dough to dinner rolls to even ethanol and biofuels. So a lot of this weather-driven rally in prices in recent weeks has led a lot of analysts and people on Wall Street to believe that some of the price decreases that we've seen over the past year, things that have made inflation go down across parts of the United States, those price decreases are likely to be ending soon.
And why is this drought now so consequential for farmers? Aren't we still a little ways out from harvest time?
Well, it depends on what crop you're looking at. Winter wheat, which is typically planted toward the end of the year, many farmers in places like Kansas, for example, which is a large wheat producer, will be harvesting that winter wheat maybe this week or next week. So the drought leading up to this point has really led those crops to grow unevenly. And wheat, as we know, is like one of the key crops that underpins basically all types of bread, baked goods, etc. Those crops that are coming to harvest now are in much worse shape than the crops that are expected to come to harvest later in this summer. There is some uncertainty to this point whether the drought will continue for things like corn and soybeans, and those crops face extremely important months in July and August. So the coming weeks will be very important to see how those crops fare and whether these drought conditions continue.
If they continue, what kind of choices might farmers face?
In some cases, farmers who are farming wheat have abandoned crops across places such as Kansas and Oklahoma. Many farmers across the country are abandoning scorched fields at the greatest rate since 1917. When we look into history books, if you recall the Dust Bowl, farmers are abandoning wheat fields faster than they did at any point during that period of time. So if drought conditions continue, we could see more of that. It's simply put that the plants aren't coming out of the ground, or if so, the yields aren't particularly high. And it just makes it uneconomical for a lot of these farmers to actually do the work of harvesting these plants. Of course, many of them have crop insurance, but for farmers themselves, it's not a great outcome. And then for the rest of us who are buying the ultimate products that they supply in stores, whether that's oatmeal or dinner rolls, that drives up prices for us at the grocery store as well.
Would that be just in America or potentially more broadly?
I mean, it could have global ramifications. The U.S. is one of the largest wheat exporters in the world. We also produce a lot of the corn that goes into ethanol as well as food as well. So if you have sort of a very difficult harvest in the U.S., that will put pressure on global markets, that will push up global prices as well. And it will put a lot of people in low-income countries in particular into positions of hardship. They might not be able to buy the basic supplies they need for daily life.
David Uberti is Wall Street Journal commodities reporter. David, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
In other news moving the world today, riots in France over the shooting of a teenager by police have escalated, plunging President Emmanuel Macron's government into what has become a nightly confrontation with youths from the country's working class suburbs. Rioters have burned municipal buildings and faced off with police in the towns around the French capital, with clashes as far away as Marseille, Reims, and Lyon. According to French officials, 667 people have been detained, with the majority of them between 14 and 18 years old. Macron plans to leave an EU summit in Brussels, where France plays a major role in European policymaking, to return to Paris and hold an emergency security meeting. French prosecutors have pressed preliminary charges of voluntary homicide against a police officer after he fatally shot a teenager on Tuesday in the Nanterre suburb of Paris. A lawyer for the police officer couldn't immediately be reached for comment. The push for digital currencies took a step forward this week, with the executive arm of the European Union publishing draft rules to govern the creation and adoption of a digital euro. The decision on whether to launch the digital form of the currency ultimately lies with the European Central Bank, which is expected to make a decision this fall. Our reporter Patricia Kausman told me how the digital currency would work, even if it could take years for it to materialize.
The digital euro would exist alongside cash, and you would be under the full control of the European Central Bank, just like cash is. And the idea, which is still being developed, would be that those in the euro area would have the option of paying anyone with their digital euro, for example, by using a digital wallet on their phones. And the idea is that people would be able to make payments for free without being hit by fees, and it would be available for people who don't even have bank accounts, and it could be transacted without an internet connection. Let's note that that's different than cryptocurrencies, for example, whose idea is precisely not to be controlled by anyone, like any institution, like the central bank or the government.
Just sort of backing up, Patricia, why is the European Union considering this in the first place?
One interesting point that the ECB makes is that others are creating digital currencies, whether that's backed by the central bank or whether that's like third parties like cryptocurrencies. So in the end, we could have a world where the digital euro, the digital dollar, whatever it is all that we have. I mean, we're not talking about tomorrow. But in that case, countries that have not developed this may find themselves holding a currency that become less transacted around the world and end up losing value. The U.S. has been kind of colder about this idea of digital dollar than many other countries. You can tell from what the authorities say that they're moving very slowly. There's no signal whatsoever that the U.S. would consider this.
That was Journal reporter Patricia Kausman. And finally, Taylor Swift could be on track to break a music industry milestone. Her Eras Tour is on track to become the biggest in concert history, overtaking Elton John's ongoing, 5 years and counting, Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour. And after recently adding dozens of new international dates that will take the Eras Tour to at least 106 shows, the tour has the potential to cross the $1 billion threshold. WSJ reporter Neil Shaw says that milestone could up the ante in a booming market for superstar-led arena and stadium shows, though he told us that many artists are operating in a very different universe.
There is something of an imbalance increasingly in the concert industry where we're seeing now with tours like Taylor and Beyonce and Madonna to come, they're just a bigger part of the pie. There's weakness in other parts of the industry where it's harder to sell tickets. So as we proceed, you are looking at increasingly kind of a superstarization of the concert industry where the 1% of this business is benefiting and it's harder for other artists to make a living and tour, which is important because in this streaming era we live in, when streaming royalties are fairly paltry for the lion's share of all artists, they make their money on touring. Well, if it's hard for you to make money on tour too, that's a double whammy.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.